Hello, grandkids. No, you are not hearing things wrong. This is Kevin again. It is Stunt Granny Audio 337, and this time my partner in crime is Chris Calamita. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing pretty good, Kevin. Man, these numbers are going to start piling up if we do multiple shows per week for any length of time. We'll be at 400 in no time.
Yeah, that's something of a New Year's resolution. I think Jeremy is a little bit on board because he has the money invested of going to WrestleMania this year. I would say that kind of helps out a little bit, in my opinion, at least from his end. Yeah, it would be awesome to get these. There was the intention of doing an NXT review for this show, but they're in a year-end review, and yeah, no reason to recap the recap.
Right, no. Especially when we have something, well, something we did last year, and I'd like to think it was something of a hit for us is Chris and Kevin review the New Japan Tokyo Dome show, Wrestle Kingdom show.
Yeah, last year was 9. I don't know why when I heard that this year was 10 that I thought last year was 10.
Nine is just that. It's just that the ultimate odd number that gets no love.
Well, I happen to think 11 is the ultimate odd number, but that's just me.
It could be one or the other. And amazingly, WrestleMania's nine and 11 are generally considered to be the two worst.
Yeah, this is true. This was neither 9 nor 11. This was 10, in fact.
And this was a significantly better show than WrestleMania 9 or WrestleMania 11, or even WrestleMania 10, which was actually a really good show.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the show. I will admit that there are some parts that maybe lacked thorough attention, which isn't surprising. One of those really that I only paid partial attention to was the rumble that started it.
Yeah, I kind of skipped ahead of that. I was kind of pointing you in the direction of, I told you to skip
Well, you
ahead.
said to skip ahead an hour and 20 or an hour and a half, and
Oh, really?
when it booted up, it had the runtime of like 8+ hours, and I'm like, holy shit. But then it started an hour and 20 minutes into that. So I'm like,
Yeah.
oh, okay, it's preset. Then we're past the point that Chris told me about.
Okay.
So, I just let it ride. And yeah, that's one of those things. It's just kind of funny. I guess when I see the little snippets on our message boards about the New Japan. It's always like there's never any garbage that is involved in their presentation. Like there's
All right. Okay.
nothing insulting like the WWE would do with like a pre-match before the pay-per-view itself. And that Rumble was exactly that. Like that was only my only takeaway from this whole thing because I mean, it's a fine idea to bring out all your old stars and have them do something that is, physically not too demanding,
Right.
while they still get to do some of their signature stuff.
It's not a bad idea. It's already an incredibly long show, so I felt that was a thing I could easily skip past.
Yeah, I mean, that is the other thing. Like, even if you discount that, like, the main portion of the card was still a little bit over 5 hours. Like, I felt like it was pushing, like, 5.5 hours.
Yeah.
And that is a lot of time. Like, I mean, I told Jeremy that WrestleMania, really, if you count the pre-show, is probably about 4.5 hours.
Yeah, indeed it is. Well, and then this past year at WrestleMania 31, because they did two matches during the pre-show, it was 5 hours. Because the main show it ran right to the time.
So
it didn't feel like that to me because I was there live and it was a specific time and it was still somewhat light out. On the show ended, but kind of a different feel to it.
Well, yeah, that was kind of funny. Even when we went in New Orleans, I know that it was only, an hour, time difference, but, that just makes things so much better when you get out. When you're getting out at 10 instead of 11, like, I just feel much better about my evening.
In Japan, the show did start at 5 p.m. So that would have gotten people, still out of there at 10 o'clock at night. So.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, well, that's good on them.
Right.
So, yeah, like I said, it's just kind of funny. Like, there's just garbage in their league, just like the WWE. So, you know, stop trying to, I think there's a little extra sugarcoating going on sometimes, with these reviews after seeing that match.
Right.
which leads us, you know, it was kind of funny just because I feel like their, structure of matches is very similar to what the WWE would do. They start off with a match that'll get the crowd into it. Is kind of a more energetic match, a more high flying match, and that was the 4-way tag team match for the IWGP Junior Tag Team Titles. Was the first real match on the card.
Yeah, they do pretty much on all their big shows some sort of a multi-way junior tag match to open the show. It's very common over there. This year, thankfully, that they were able to, the incoming of Matt Sydal and Ricochet, and then former WWE jobber Trent Beretta having a whole new life teaming with Rocky Romero. You were able to add at least a little something different to the style of match. It was a very, very good opener.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny. I saw him the other week in Ring of Honor with Roppongi Vice. I always find it ridiculous how many different names Rocky Romero comes up with for his various and sundry tag teams. Because he's been in quite a few. Yeah. Forever Hooligans cracked me up with what's that guy's name?
It's Alex Caldwell.
Oh yeah, and this one Trent Beretta, like they didn't say, and that was the thing that they didn't say his full name. I don't think on ROH, or at least I wasn't paying attention to when they came to the ring. I'm watching the Penguins, and I didn't need to see what just happened.
Man. Don't do that. Don't do that to yourself.
So, where was I? Oh, Trent Beretta. I guess I didn't realize how big of a guy he was. And that was the other thing. Like, I'm like, oh, like, not maybe big, but he's tall. Like, I was surprised at how he towered over a lot of the guys in this match and the match that he had in ROH. I was like, that was the only reason I was just like, nah, that's not him. He's too tall. I was like, damn, yeah, he's kind of a big guy. Like, I guess I didn't think of him as a big guy.
Right. I mean, guys in WWE, definitely, guys that have made it as far as he did in WWE, you know, you kind of got to have a little bit of size so that when you go into New Japan or ROH, you're still bigger than the average wrestler while still qualifying as a junior heavyweight.
Yeah, because he isn't that bulky. He is more of a, I would say, a Randy Orton body type, where he's kind of long and lean. So I can see fitting him into that category. But, you know, it was a fun opener. And just like, again, like talking about the earlier stuff, there's a bit of always a fishy ending to me when the champions don't get pinned. You know, again, another thing that I'm sure if the WWE did it, it would be the worst thing ever. But New Japan, hey, it's Japanese. It's cool to have these shitty parts to this angle.
Right. But in defense of New Japan, their storylines do have a better track record of coming around full circle.
Oh.
I mean, so that will certainly play into things in the junior tag team division as things go on. I'm sure.
Right.
With the heels winning the championship by not defeating. Might have to be the champions.
It would make sense for Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly to challenge for those. And it was kind of that perfect. It was a bit of a spot fest match, high paced, and you know it does kick the show off the way that you'd want to.
I enjoyed this immensely. It was probably the of the multi-way junior tag matches I've seen during my watching of New Japan. This was easily the best one that they've done, in my opinion.
And it led to another thing that I guess I didn't feel like existed in New Japan. The idea that it's a good plan to have a six-man tag team title. Can you just have a six-man tag team match, please?
I'm
begging you here.
I never heard of the being the never trio titles. I never heard of it. Although I will say this, now that they're champions in New Japan, it does mean that the Briscoes will tour Japan more often, which I will gladly take in exchange for this kind of silly championship.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, I'll be bummed that the Jay's off TV. I will be excited that Mark is off TV. Although, I mean, he does a serviceable enough job. But, if Jay's not going to be in the title hunt, I don't see any reason for him to be on TV, and he does not seem like he's in the title hunt at the current moment.
Right, in Ring of Honor, they've done everything that you can possibly do with the Briscoes as a tag team. So, literal change of scenery is probably going to do them some good. I mean, start with this trios title thing, and then eventually, you know, move them up to the main tag team championship. That, as we'll get into talking about later, are going. going to need a new, are likely going to need a new American tag team to carry the division.
And, you know, speaking of ROH, they actually had a straight-up match at Wrestle Kingdom 10. And that was Jay Lethal versus Michael Elgin for the ROH title.
And as I said during my Monday afternoon tweet fest about this show from the South Korean account, Truth Martini, easily the least talented person on this show.
Yeah, they continue to have him be by Jay Lethal's side.
I did not think he did not need to. He did not need to come on this trip. They did not need to pay his airfare, pay his hotel, and pay his performance fee for this. So I think Jay Lethal could have very easily come by himself.
Yeah, that's what's kind of funny about that situation. It was the announcers. Both Matt Stryker and Kevin Kelly were really putting over how many champions Truth Martini has managed to the title. So I suppose it's true, but I'm not sure why you let that schmuck do that in your organization. Like, that's still one of the more head-scratching maneuvers of ROH that I just choose to ignore more times than not.
Right. I will give my Detroit boy a little bit of credit here. He was having the time of his life out there. And the biggest show he'll ever be on in his entire career. he was having fun.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's doing anything that he isn't supposed to do. I just don't think that he does it well. The match itself, you know, it was fine. Like, it just felt like, because Elgin hasn't really been back on Ring of Honor TV that much, it felt like a bit of a rushed match, so it wasn't a surprise that Jay Lethal retained.
It was a little bit of a surprise to me because Elgin spent his time away from ROH really making himself a name in Japan. Making himself a name in New Japan. He really performed well in the G1 tournament over the summer. So he won a lot of people over there. So it kind of surprised me that they didn't give him the big win in what's essentially his new home.
Okay. Well, I guess I didn't know that he was going to stay over there. It was just...
Well, no, I don't think he's going to stay over there. He'll do tours. I mean, he'll be like the Bucks. He'll do both as much as possible.
It just kind of depends. Like, you know, there are a couple of different, like... Jay Lethal, is that his first trip over there, actually?
Yes, it was, yeah.
Okay. Some people in Ring of Honor, like Lethal, don't really go over that much. And I felt like Elgin wasn't that much of a regular over there, because I feel like I've been watching Ring of Honor now for, like, 3 years? 2 or 3 years? The Sinclair network there.
Right. Well, with Elgin, he made his first Japan tour in August, and yeah, he said he performed well in the annual round robin tournament, the G1, and there he and so he won a lot of people over, and so I don't think he's been back since. So he has been back from Japan since the summer. He'll probably do the big shows, occasional tours between ROH. I could see Lethal getting more Japan dates as well.
I think that would help him in the overall scheme. I've been arguing for that, although I do feel like he's kind of stepped it up recently, but I think that they've concentrated on him as champion more recently, too, which has just helped his presentation.
And I
guess that's why I expected it. It seems like they have full support behind him being, you know, the best that Ring of Honor has to offer. And, hey, enough. Kia.
Dogs.
Yeah.
Stop it. Dogs.
And the dogs make an appearance.
Dogs, stop it.
Always fun when they make an appearance on the show.
Stop. No.
So, there isn't really much more to say about that match. Like, it really still wasn't... Because those two matches, the six-man match and that match... You know, it again, kind of like the WWE format, you take things down a little bit, usually, after that barn burner of an opener.
Right.
And you just kind of put some stuff in there that's going to be good, but, you know, because that match, it really wasn't that long, either. You know, again, just like the WWE format, the earlier matches... while they get more time than they would on, you know, a weekly show, they still are relatively short.
Right. Yeah, and just, could have done without the book finish.
That was the only way to keep it viable for... you know, Elgin to have another match sometime in the future if they want to keep on with this feud. Like I said, I mean, personally, I felt like it was a little rushed. So, to me, it's within ROH's rights if they want to force some type of a rematch.
Right. Yeah.
For him to get it that way.
Right.
There was one guy I had kind of forgotten that we had watched him last year, but his look cracks me up. Kenny Omega.
Yeah, Kenny Omega definitely. He certainly has something. It's a dirty, sleazy look that just completely unlikable character. Hell of a talented guy. I mean, we'll talk about his we'll talk about his new role in New Japan, actually.
So we had to take a little break after real life happened. Hold on, this is real life. But anyway, we had to take a little break after the dogs had a fun reaction there. And we were talking about Kenny Omega... But you had some breaking news that we needed to get to.
Yes.
In the meantime.
It's big and breaking news as we could possibly have here. John Cena will be undergoing shoulder surgery tomorrow, and he will miss WrestleMania.
Oh, wow. Wow.
6 to 9 recovery time.
I'm not surprised. I mean, people talked about him wrestling all of those matches. And I'm not sure if this was an injury. I don't know if they really described the injury or what it was from. But I would think that just all of... all of the wear and tear he's taken from as much wrestling as he's done recently may have been part of a cause, at least.
Definitely part. I know Ansaro went down his injury. Dave Meltzer, maybe this Olympic style of risk of lifting that WWE trainers are encouraging nowadays, especially at the Performance Center, is causing more problems than it's, you know, fixing as far as, you know, wrestler conditioning.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they haven't really looked at it. Cena, like, I guess I just feel like people work out the way they want to work out. At least the people that I've heard talk seem to, because, like, Dean Ambrose, I guess, was on Chris Jericho, and he mentioned how he likes to go biking and whatnot. Like, there's some different activities that he likes to do. They always talk about Seth Rollins being into CrossFit.
Yeah.
You know, I guess I just feel like there are different people that have different styles of working out. I don't know why that took so long to spit out of my mouth.
Right. But yeah, there is and I think a lot of it might actually, you know, come from John Cena, the tendency to move more towards Olympic powerlifting. Of course, you know, John Cena is a guy who's been lifting heavy his entire adult life, and he's 38 years old now, and it, you know, ridiculous situation too, where he was out with the surgery after he dropped the title to Daniel Bryan, that, you know, while he was out with an injury, he posted this photo on Instagram of him beating his personal bench press record at, you know, age 36 after elbow surgery. So it's, yeah, kind of ridiculous, you know.
Yeah, and I guess that's why I'm not sure. I guess I feel like, and I know that Cesaro has worked out with Cena before and kind of respects him. I just feel like the way his body is shaped, he works out differently than Cena, just because I feel like, you know, maybe Cena's a little bit naturally bulky, but I mean, Cesaro's a big guy. I would think that if he wanted to be put on more weight, he could and keep it muscle.
Right. But yeah, I mean, for John Cena, I mean, obviously the wear and tear of the in-ring, probably combined with, you know, a life of lifting heavy, probably, you know, absolutely leaves them susceptible to, you know, injuries like the...
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm not sure that he would have climbed his way into the title picture by the time WrestleMania came around.
Right, but he's always a, you know, top 2, 3, 4, you know, match guy that you can always rely on. They were thinking of, you know, doing the first ever WrestleMania match with him and Undertaker. You know, that's out the window now. Anything else they were looking for him to, you know, for him to do, and maybe they were looking at him, Cena versus Roman Reigns. We don't know.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that could have been the plan. Yeah, like you said, it's not now.
Yeah, absolutely. And, well, for WWE's sake, they better hope that, you know, that Dwayne Johnson has been able to, you know, work things through with his production company of his new movie, and, you know, and the insurance company to allow him to have a match. Probably even before this, they were hoping that, but now I guess now they really, really are going to be hoping for that little something extra for the show.
Yeah, they definitely, are being pushed as far as having to, go to the new people.
Right. And of course, you know, in the thread in our Facebook group about how, you know, someone's posted something saying, this is going to be Roman Reigns for the next, 3 months. It's a dude wrapped in bubble wrap.
Oh man, that's pretty funny. Yeah, I mean, that would be crazy if Reigns went down on top of this. Because, again, like, I mean, he has just really started to kind of be what they wanted him to be. It would be a pretty big blow to lose him, too. But, again, like, at least he's a little bit younger. I mean, I know he's not really young. And, you know, John Cena has been wrestling for a long time.
Yeah, he definitely has. He's been in at a high level for a very long time, and he had, you know, arguably the best, you know, in-ring run of his career just last year with, you know, every week the U.S. Open Challenge. So I'm sure that all, you know, the aware of all that, and plus, you know, he took 2 months off and then came back to have, you know, matches with Del Rio, the match with Del Rio, you know, last week, as well as, you know, against Del Rio and all the house shows, you know, this, I mean, you know, months of not taking bumps on that, you know, on that shoulder, and then all of a sudden you're back to the grind again. That can have an effect too.
Yeah, I would think so. So yeah, I mean, that is big breaking news.
Indeed it is.
But yeah, I mean, we were on the main path though of Wrestle Kingdom 10 here.
Yes. We were at the junior title match, and we were discussing Kenny Omega.
The
sleaziest wrestler of the day.
Yeah, he will win the sleazeball contest at any point. And, you know, he started the bad evening for the Bullet Club. Because...
This was a really, really good match. And maybe the first match that really kind of felt like a big, big match on this show with, you know, with you know, Big Show pageantry with the Back to the Future homage from and his second Taguchi. That was really good.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. I just really like I've seen Kushida a couple of times now in Ring of Honor. It's ridiculous, but he really pulls off that Marty McFly look all the time anyway. I have seen it without the Doc Brown. I'm still just like, why does that work for you? Like not everyone can get away with it. I think he can get away with it.
He absolutely can, and it was, you know, really great presentation there. I mean, and a really, really good, you know, classic, you know, face dynamic in this match. Just again, you know, crisp work, everything, you know, everything, you know, hit well. Everything was on point. They, you know, they told a good story. They built the finish very well with, you know, all the Bullet Club interference, and finally Taguchi coming back and laying out the Young Bucks and allowing Kushida to finally get Omega and his big move and get the big win. I mean, Kushida really is, you know, a kind of a perfect junior heavyweight guy. I don't know if I ever see him moving up in weight classes, so to speak, but, you know,
right,
he's absolutely, it's probably their junior heavyweight standard for quite some time.
Well, and then that's kind of the funny thing. Like, that would be perfectly fine for him to stay there. Like, I guess, for one thing, like, WrestleMania is definitely a big spot for the baby faces to finally get over on their nemesis. Sure, some of the heels win just to try and keep things a little bit honest. And that's kind of the same thing here, in my opinion. And this was one of them. This is the, send you home happy, phase of things too.
Yeah, absolutely. It was very, very, very well done. You know, again, they got, everything got a great reaction, and, you know, and everything, you know, built to the finish. now the junior heavyweight champion, and Omega is going to be, is definitely a star on the rise, and they actually did still upcoming to talk about, you know, what New Japan did with their day after their big show that the equivalent to the Raw the night after WrestleMania, where they reset all their big angles. So Kenny Omega is going to be playing a huge role in New Japan's 2016. But we'll get us a couple more matches in before we really get into that.
Yeah, I did not happen to read about that. I really could have. But these next two fellows in the next match, Doc Gallows and Carl Anderson, are two of the possible defections out of New Japan.
Yeah.
So it is not surprising that Makabe and Hunama ended up winning the tag team titles.
Not a surprise at all. Although that was probably going to be finished, whether or not, Gallows and Anderson put a notice that day. It said that, you know, no finishes were changed. So yeah, there sounds like that Gallows and Anderson are going to play out the end of their time in New Japan. There was an angle done on the New Year's Dash Show, as it's called, the next day that. You know, so the feud is going to continue. They're going to get, you know, one more match out of it, which again, that won't be surprising. You know, the result probably will not be surprising, but it will be kind of Gallows and Anderson's swan song. Anderson has been in Japan, essentially for the last 8 years, making very infrequent trips back to the United States.
That definitely, like, as far as the Ring of Honor exchange, like, as far as. It's not usually that there are too many Americans that just come back to make a surprise appearance in ROH. But they had brought him back on a couple of occasions. He was always gone. Like, I never got the vibe that he was part of the ROH roster. And that was a little surprising for an American, I guess, at least to me. I know that some do it, but...
He's been in... the exclusive guy for, you know, nearly a decade. Obviously getting to the point in his career where probably feeling that it's now or never to try and make a WWE run happen.
Right.
Gallows is a guy who WWE was very high on for quite a while. I mean, something happened that led to him being released and being up, you know, first in TNA, in the Aces and Eights, and which, of course, went absolutely nowhere and did him absolutely no favors at all, because it did no one any favors. And played a big part in TV now being on a fifth-rate network and being happy with drawing 225,000 viewers. Gallows, you know, of course, comes over to Japan, hooks up with Carl Anderson and the Bullet Club, has a pretty good run. Once again, I've never been very impressed with the New Japan tag heavyweight tag team division. I think it's almost too American style the way it's done, or the way that they do their tag team division over there. So it's like nothing I can't see in WWE every week. So I really don't, I kind of tune out. Although this was a better than usual New Japan tag match, I will give it that.
I mean, I think that it would be a good addition for the WWE if they leave them a tag team.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, because they could use another team or two, to really, I mean, if they, and it does seem, again, like the WWE's, gone with something of a tag team division for a while now. Like, it's not the greatest thing, but it's not as non-existent as it was there for a while in the, early aughts.
Right, no, it's, the tag division is perfectly fine right now, and Gallows and Anderson, I think, would actually be I think they'd actually mean more to WWE than they would New Japan at this point. I actually do feel that. So I think that there is that element to their leaving.
Right. After that matchup, we got Hirooki Goto taking on Tetsuya Naito. And I'm glad to, I do not normally go to the Wrestling Observer, but I'm glad this is another thing that people that I feel like review New Japan on the message boards that we frequent, the last line of Meltzer's review is, "The interference is getting old by this point in the show."
Yeah, I mean, I get where they're going with Naito and his group, and I do like that they've got a guy who's simply his name, who is evil, and his name is evil. I do like that a lot, but another heel faction interfering in each other's matches all the time is probably not what New Japan really needed, even though Naito's actually a guy who, as a babyface, was just stuck behind, you know, being behind, you know, 3, 4, 5 other guys, so, you know, trying to, you know, make a heel run was probably the best thing for him. But at this point, you know, after the previous, you know, Bullet Club matches had taken place, yeah, this was definitely a little too much of the same thing that we've seen, even though, once again, it was a very well worked match.
Right. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I'd be hard-pressed, like you said, kind of after, well, not even after that, because, I mean, everything was a well-worked match, like, at a minimum.
Right.
For this, but, you know, and I guess we kind of talked, I think we talked about it, just the length of the show, I think, necessitates kind of blowing through some of these matches a little bit more than necessary.
Right.
We really started the big matches then, again, to go back to the WWE kind of setup.
Well, the WWE setup is big match, small match, big match, small match. So this was the top, you know, four matches all going boom, 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 which WWE rarely does do.
Well, they've definitely been finishing with two big matches at the last few WrestleManias, in my opinion. And that has been a little bit of a change of course. Like, I did feel like a lot of times they put the women's match in there, and then I guess I'd have to look at the lineups to be completely sure, but I feel like they've at least done just the two big matches at the end. So they're starting to stack them up at least a little bit.
Right.
Just because, but just like WrestleMania, there's a decent chunk of time in between matches here.
Yeah.
So they do give you a little bit of a breather, even if it's not a match breather.
Right.
Yeah, this was for the never open weight title. And it involved Tomohiro Ishii and Katsuyori Shibata.
Oh, good pronouncing. Good pronunciation there.
Again, like, maybe this was me not understanding our friends who write about this stuff. But there was a portion of this match that was completely ridiculous. And it was them getting into a battle, kicking each other in the back.
Yeah, that was a little. Once again, I guess if you don't understand, you know, the fighting spirit of strong style in Japan, and kind of the history of it, it's a little silly, and it was just silly anyway. I mean, type of style. There was a match like this also involving, I think it was Ishii and Goto, if I'm not mistaken, last year. You know, having a very similar match with a lot of, you know, stiff chops, stiff kicks, headbutts, things of that nature. That was,
yeah.
I'll easily say it's my least favorite part of Japan. I just don't get it. You know, I understand what they were going for. I understand who it was, you know, who the target market for it is, but it's just not my cup of tea.
Yeah. This one, yeah, like you said, it's definitely a style, and they definitely commit to it, and you can tell that they're doing things intentionally, but it's a little silly for me. Especially a spot like that. Like, I guess I don't mind taking the punishment, because pretty much everyone does that these days. There's probably a little more, I don't want to call it no selling, but there's definitely some more kicking out of finishers going on these days. And that was certainly the case in the co-main event with Shinsuke Nakamura versus AJ Styles for the Intercontinental title.
Well, this was one of the big two matches. This was just like, I guess on a WrestleMania, you know, you bring out everything you got, and they kick out of it, and then Nakamura calls himself the King of Strong Style, but it's not like Strong Style in the previous match. Yes, you know, he'll kick you pretty hard, and but it's more he's got more diversity to what he does. He works better with other talent, and you know, mixing of styles. I'll give it the nod. I'll give it the nod to be the best match of the show. The best of the show over the main event. I will give it that. It was again a phenomenal matchup. You know, two guys just bring a game, and we'll be there. Well. Maybe not necessarily last ever for however long their careers last, but for the time being, their last time in the Tokyo Dome, and they let it all hang out. Yeah, an absolutely tremendous match. And, I mean, they say New Japan's loss is going to be WWE's gain, as long as they know what they're getting.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that Nakamura is more of... he translates a bit better into the WWE than Okada would, to me.
Yeah, I think so. I believe so.
Because that one, just to me, that one, and most people have probably seen the little gif of it, I would think, by now, of AJ Styles shooting the bull at him, and he grabs it, puts it in his mouth, chews it, and then spits it out. You know, I mean, that is definitely a personality thing. Like, I get the style that that Okada represents, but I don't think that translates as well to maybe a more broad American audience would.
I mean, just Nakamura's, walk to the ring, or his more Michael Jackson's flared moonwalk to the ring. Just a guy that reaches out and grabs you. I'm trying to think. Jim Ross said last year that he was able to engage in a conversation with Nakamura, because Nakamura does know English. So hopefully that is the case. At least Nakamura that I'm thinking that was able. Jim Ross that does. Already speak English, so that's a big plus for him already. He's just got a natural charisma that, his work is tremendous. His work is, of course, the word being that Nakamura and AJ are both going to be, said right to them, they're going to be paid a lot of money, way too much money than it can ever possibly justify by them spending a day in NXT, So they're going to end up on the main roster. Styles is free of New Japan pretty much today, so he could be in the world. He could be in the Royal Rumble if that's where they want to debut him. Nakamura still has a championship, obviously, has made through, I believe, February, and the championship can be dropped.
Right.
He'll be in later.
Yeah, but... And Jeremy and I talked about this a little, and it bears repeating, honestly. Just... they don't need much time to get acclimated. Like, I'm sure that they'll go down to the performance center for a little bit. They'll run over some pointers, maybe give them a few matches down there. But that is probably going to be the extent of things.
I mean, they're two of the best. Yeah. I mean, AJ Styles, as I said, AJ Styles, Matt Stryker, you know, repeated over and over. AJ Styles has been a pro for 18 years. I mean, he is what he is now. I mean, whatever his deficiencies as a promo are, he's not going to get any better. He is what he is, and you got to work around, accentuate his positives and hide the negatives.
I mean, I don't think he's terrible on the mic. I think that Roman Reigns is starting to show a personality that's more consistent and better for him. But AJ Styles, I mean, he can get his point across, but it's nothing more than that.
Yeah, nothing more than that. I mean, I know, and he's got a fairly thick Georgia draw. So, once again, he is what he is. After 18 years, you're not going to teach the old dog too many new tricks. So,
I thought that he's learned a few more tricks. Like, it was always one of those things that I complained about in TNA that no one ever seemed to develop.
Right.
And Styles wasn't any different. Like, I feel like he's added a few more wrinkles in Japan.
Oh, yeah.
And Jeremy and I mentioned it. We think that that's one of the reasons that Owens, honestly, like, he spent all of about 4 months down in NXT.
Yeah, he wasn't there very long at all. I mean, and then kind of what was the funny thing is that the main reason you keep him there is to lose weight. He really didn't lose all that much, or he's kind of gained quite enough back in the last few months, but. He's still Kevin Owens, still great talker, he still moves great, still got a lot going on, and so yeah, you know, guys like that don't need to spend that much time down there. I mean, of course you have the issue of, you know, there's certain guys you almost want to keep down there because you need it for the strength of the brand, like Finn Balor and Sami Zayn. And although, yes, and actually Sami Zayn, actually, if you, I don't know if you haven't watched any of Breaking Ground. But he was kind of, actually, you know, once again, it's a pretty, you know, the documentary series, you know, pretty honest during there talking to Sammy. Just like, if I come back to NXT, it almost feels like a step back for me. It's just, you know, there are rumors that, you know, that for the, you know, because they want the NXT before WrestleMania, NXT show before WrestleMania to take over to be, you know, a really big show for 10,000 people. You know, the talk is, you know, a main event of Finn Balor versus Sami Zayn, but that means that second year in a row, Sami Zayn doesn't get called up in time to have a match at WrestleMania. So that's for the poor guy, you know.
I mean, it does kind of stink in some ways, but I also think. I would think at this point you would realize what's going on, at least with NXT and these really fairly big rooms that, you know, I mean, no one else is going to fill up a 10,000-seat arena. ROH isn't going to. TNA sure as hell is not going to.
All right, it's a credit to NXT, but also, of course, again, the big money is on the main roster, and you know, it's still stings, and once again, I mean, all the top guys on NXT are going to make it to the WWE main roster, you know, soon enough. So it's not the end of the world. It's just, I'm sure it's a little bit disappointing. And,
yeah.
And of course, we see guys like Katie Nakamura, I mean, understanding who they are and their reputations, but still, it's kind of, you know, it's going to be just disappointing for some guys, I'm sure, just to see these guys get brought right to the roster after they've been toiling away in the system for so long.
Yeah, because honestly, from the first time I saw Balor, like, I'm like, really? Like, really? Like, what does this guy need exactly?
Well, I mean, some promo work. That's the real main reason. Like, a lot of the standout, plus to learn a new style and to acclimate themselves to a bigger ring and, you know, the way WWE does things and, you know, working for TV, playing to the hard camera instead of, you know, the arena and the whole arena, you know, things like that. You have to learn. It takes a little time to learn. But, yeah, I mean, Sami Zayn going on 3 years there, maybe actually almost going on 4 years there, maybe even, you know, and, you know, even Balor, you know, about a year and a half. It's for.
Yeah. So now that we've detoured back to the WWE again, let's get back to the main event. I guess I agree with you. Like, I think that Styles and Nakamura was a better match than Okada versus Tanahashi.
Actually, to double back around, let's update people and update you on kind of what happened the day after involving Nakamura and Styles and also Kenny Omega and the Bullet Club. It was a tag team match that AJ and Kenny Omega against Nakamura and a partner whose name I don't remember at this point. just kind of be there, so I won't worry about that.
Right.
They had a match. It actually ended up essentially being Nakamura's partner being taken out and essentially being left 2-1 against Styles and Omega, ending with Omega pinning Nakamura. So, and Omega is saying that he's going to be a heavyweight, pinning Nakamura for the championship next. And then Omega laid out AJ Styles, followed up by the Bullet Club coming down, pretending like they were picking up AJ and dusting him off, and then they all laid out AJ and pretty much kicked him out of the Bullet Club and kicked him out of New Japan. So AJ's gone, and they're going to move on with the Bullet Club, and Kenny Omega is the new leader.
Yeah, I mean, they did not waste any time. If there was any, like, maybe he's not coming, well, I think everyone just got the answer with that one maneuver.
Right. So, you know, New Japan is still very talented, even with losing four guys, still very heavy in talent, and, you know, making the best of the situation and moving on. And
well, and it's just to me too, and I feel like we've made this point when we have talked about NXT. The WWE still hasn't developed anyone. They're bringing in new stars, but it's all people who have made their name and gotten their credentialing elsewhere.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of the interesting part of one of the interesting parts of watching Breaking Ground. I do recommend if you've got time to kind of binge your way through. It's like 8 or 10 episodes total. 30 to 45 minutes total. They do talk about the jocks they signed, the former football players, and kind of their trials and tribulations, how some of this isn't, especially Baron Corbin, who's been in the system for 3 years and is really grasped everything. He's improved greatly in the last year, but still doesn't completely grasp everything. Meanwhile, you got the guys who are tested, and whether it be in front of 1,000 people in an ROH building or in the freaking Tokyo Dome for New Japan. I mean, those are the guys that really. really have it going on.
Yeah, I mean, the WWE has really had a very limited number of people that that they've really kind of produced on their own. And again, like, they're going to be good additions to WWE, but they're not their creation. Like, no matter they do with them.
The last person who, not completely a WWE creation, but, you know, someone who was trained by Lance Storm and then kind of, and never didn't really have a big long indie run before WWE signed him, because he, you know, came in on Lance Storm's recommendation, would be Tyler Breeze, who made it to the main roster, all the, and then not the best for him right now.
Right, and okay, well, I guess, is there a lot to say about the main event, because we are approaching the dreaded hour mark.
Main event, great match. I mean, it's not for the main event, but that's not, I'm not at it at all. Great work, the two. You know, year after year after year, best guys in Japan, the two biggest stars in Japan, having a great match, a rubber match per se in their feud, because I believe they've had 7 one-on-one matches over the years, each won 3, and there was one draw in there. The element of Okada had never beaten Tanahashi at the Tokyo Dome, even though they've had 2 other matches at the Dome, and Okada finally getting his big win. They use all their big moves. They use each other's big moves. That match felt great. Yeah, I mean, it was great match.
I mean, that's kind of the funny thing about maybe picking the Styles and Nakamura matches better, because this one was not bad by any means.
No. I mean, I absolutely recommend the whole show. I mean, maybe you should probably. Recommend watching it in you know, maybe 2 hour spurts over the course of a few days. It might be a little much, especially if it's your first exposure in Japan, but at the very least, watch the last 2 matches.
Okie dokie. Well, I mean, that sounds like a good summation of things. So I don't see any reason not to go out on that. At DeFrango 11, at Chris Calamita, the brand at Stunt Granny. Sippy Time Beer of the Night, Stunt Granny Brewing's own Black Belt, Black IPA. It's a good one. So, but I need to find a new recipe, because this one's technically a clone recipe. So I need to come up with something of my own doing that I like.
All right, well, we'll keep that between you and me and the 30 people of them.